The most practical and powerful way to get believers headed into the right direction of spiritual maturity is to help them establish habits that promote spiritual growth. As we open this episode of the Transform Podcast, we're here today to help you develop the spiritual growth habits you need to develop yourself into all Jesus longs for you to become. This is Mike Powers reminding you that being a disciple certainly requires discipline, and at Eagles in Leadership, we believe these habits are to be enjoyed rather than endured. We don't want you to be afraid of the spiritual exercises that will strengthen and develop them. Of course, there are dozens of good habits we need to develop as we grow to maturity, and in this series, we're going to talk about the foundational habits that must be learned first in order to grow. We cannot talk about character without first talking about habits, as Dr. Smith teaches his students at Bible Believers Christian College and Seminary in Hawthorne, California. He wants to remind you that character is the way we habitually act.
Let's continue our discussion on spiritual disciplines, and I just want to review for just a moment. The whole idea is that you cannot do effective ministry with a shallow spirituality. Write it down. I can't do effective ministry with a shallow spirituality. It's not possible. You can do ministry, you just can't do effective ministry. Transformative ministry comes from a heart that's been transformed. And how do I know if the heart's been transformed? It's because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The choices, now hear me, it's not just the words, it's the choices. The choices I make reveal the heart that I have. The choices I make reveal the heart that I have. Now, when you and I have made good choices, it's just by way of review, we reap what we sow. We reap what we sow. Galatians 6, 7, 8, and 9. We reap what we sow. And so if we are, Colossians 2, 6, and 7, planted deep in the rooted in the walk of Christ, literally walking the steps that Jesus would walk in us and through us. If we're doing that, we are nourished, which produces strength, expansion of our ministry, and ultimately fruitfulness. And we're talking about how do we root ourselves, and we talked about the imperative of Bible reading, which feeds into then a clarity of prayer. We know what to pray for, we know what to ask God to remove, what we ought to be reaching out for. In fact, in the last couple days, as I've been reading the Word, God's been placing on my heart certain things to ask for. When things are stuck and I don't know what God's up to, I need to shut out the world for a little bit of time by fasting, where I combine more reading of the Word with more focused prayer, and I don't eat, and I literally take the time that it would be to prepare, eat, and clean up what I was eating, and I focus and concentrate myself. Lord, here's where I'm at. Here's what's going on. I need a breakthrough. And as I work on that kind of an understanding, I come to the fourth discipline, which is worship. Worship. Romans 12, 1 and 2. These are very familiar verses that we hardly ever enact. I beg you, because of what was said in chapter 11 about the Father being willing to chop out the church to put the Jews back in. That's the context. I beg you, what are you supposed to do? Dedicate, present your body, a sacrifice that's alive. Now, if you think about this from the Old Testament, you immediately have to think of things like the Passover lamb. On day 10, in the first month, you pick out the lamb. And you have a living sacrifice, and you keep it for 4 days. And then on day 14, you go in, and the father of the house puts his hand on the forehead and transfers the sins of his family onto that sacrificial lamb. Then he cuts the throat, and the blood is applied to the altar by the priest. a living sacrifice. When Paul, Rabbi Shaul of Tarsus, says, present your body a living sacrifice, he is saying to you, he is saying to me, you are to literally consider yourself dead to Christ. It's all for Christ, dead in Christ. You're coming to Christ. My life's over. He must increase, I must decrease. Not my will, yours be done. Over and over we read these things. And so in worship, we say, you are king, I am not. Can't be a friend of Caesar. He claims to be another king. Those guys, they're a problem. They all say there's another king, Jesus. Question of worship is, who's king? And if I'm not king, will I surrender my life in its entirety? My agenda, my plans, my goals, everything's got to go. If any man desires to come after me, let him, number one, what?
Deny himself.
Oh, there you go, right there. Yeah, but you don't understand how much I really want this. Yeah, I do. That means you're still the king. I understand completely. But if I'm the king, trust me. Trust me. And so, in worship, we are trying to get across to ourselves first, and then to God. We're trying to get across a very simple issue. And that issue is, I'm abdicating, I'm going to talk about that in a minute, I'm abdicating my rule for Jesus. Abdicate means what?
Give it up.
I step away from the seat of power. I'm no longer in that position. I'm abdicating rule. It's not the time when my term ends. I'm just saying, I'm ending my term now. In worship. Now think this through for a minute, because here's where we have the greatest, what I believe to be the greatest oxymoron of the 21st century. An oxymoron is when, what happens? We say one thing, we do the exact opposite. Oxymoron. We come every week to what?
Worship.
And yet we in the 21st century have one of the most self-centered faiths that Christianity's known in 2,000 years. We even have sermons to help you keep your selfishness. How to be happy in Jesus. How to get all the money you want in Jesus. How not to suffer for Jesus. Now, we repackage the titles pretty good, but if we were teaching the real stuff, we wouldn't have sanctuaries filled with people jumping up and down going, I'm a friend of God. They'd be going, I don't want none of that God. Because if we started at the beginning, if any man desires to come after me, let him deny himself, people would say, I don't want any part of this. The only people left would be the real followers. See, I've learned, I've abdicated rule of my life. I've abdicated that. And I've said, Lord, you're in charge. Wherever, whenever, whyever, it's you. Now, when you do this, it's very freeing. Because what you basically say is, you've got a huge problem, God. What's the big problem that God has when I tell him, you, all you, not me? What's the big problem God has? He's got me. You know that thing where they tell all the women you need to have kids? You know that when you're young, all the women say, I gotta have kids. And then they become 12. And all the women go, somebody put something in my Kool-Aid. They become 16 and you go, I know we didn't get the right kids at the hospital. Or you say quietly, after the lights turned out and the doors closed on your bedroom, you say, why did we ever want kids? You see, that's what God goes through. To some extent, he's got to deal with Matt. He's got to feed him and clothe him and try to corral him You know, maybe your relationship with God is so spiritually perfect that you're looking at me like, you know, with great judgment. But listen, God having to shepherd my heart is worse than shepherding cats. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. I can go hours without thinking about God. Anybody else understand what I'm talking about? And then we claim to be so spiritual. See, that's my problem. And I'd like to tell you after 42 years that sin doesn't affect me anymore. I'd love to tell you that. But I'm thinking about where I'm going tomorrow on date day for lunch. No, where we're going. As in food. Do they have a buffet? And some of you have the same problem because you post pictures of salads for lunch. And I empathize. The lust of the flesh. And who's going to rule? And I have to, not on Sunday. Now listen, here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. Is that what I do on Sunday is a reflection of what I've done during the week. When somebody would tell me as a pastor, "Oh, pastor, we couldn't make it Sunday." I translate that immediately. Here's what it sounds like to me when you say that. We haven't been with God all week anyway, so why would we need to come on Sunday? Because if it's important, you find a way. And if it's not, you make an excuse. It's that simple for me. And I have to abdicate my rule and reign all day long sometimes. Surely every day, all week long. And so I am abdicating my rule for Jesus' rule in my life. Now listen, it's very hard to worship if I haven't been in the Word. Unless worship is just about touching my flesh. If it's all about tickling ears, as Paul will say, and in the latter days we find that to be true. Who's got the better worship team? Who's got the smoke pots? Who's got the great lights and the flashing this and the and who can we bring in next? This is huge. And if I refuse to daily bow here, then I'm only going to look for worship that excites my flesh. And so you wind up either abdicating rule for Jesus Christ's reign in your life, or you don't worship. And that changes everything. And we're talking about this worship being the abdicating of my rule to Jesus' reign in my life. And if we're going to do that effectively, you and I have to, we have to constantly be saying, "Not my will." This is the hardest aspect. This is the hardest aspect of faith. It's the hardest aspect of faith from people who haven't died yet. You remember what Paul says in Philippians 1, where he tells us that he's already laid down his life for Christ. The life that he now lives, he lives by faith. See, if you haven't died to Christ, in Christ, with Christ, for Christ, if you haven't died to your old life, worship has to be exciting. Worship has to be stimulating. Worship has to feed my flesh because my spirit is not receptive to the things of God yet. I am still, feed me, tell me what I want to hear. Tell me. But worship is none of me and all of He. And so I have to come to this place where we're literally in worship, I'm working very, very hard in this discipline. Very, very hard in this discipline to get to the place where I am seeing God's will for my every choice. That's what I'm working towards. God, show me what's your will for my life. But that's pretty big. It's a lot easier to ask God, what's your will for my day? But that's still huge. What about your day when it involves your spouse, your coworkers, your supervisor, the parking attendant? And you have to ask yourselves, have I surrendered myself? See, if everything is about me, if everything is about me, are you familiar with stories like, I was having a conversation with somebody and we were talking about somebody that we both knew, and that person was dying of cancer and it was going badly, slowly. It was just awful. We were talking about it. And the other person actually said something to me that was to this effect. Oh, I don't want to talk about that. Boy, you know, that really just makes me feel bad. And so I said, I stole this line from many police shows on television. Imagine how it makes them feel. You see, that's where my self is far more important, because I haven't died. I haven't surrendered myself. But in worship, I'm going, God, I've surrendered. I'm dead. Now, what do we do? What do we do? Last week was one of those weeks where God didn't speak. This is real quiet. And I just kept reading what He'd been saying to me and reading what He'd been saying to me. But the last 3-4 days I've been saying, God, I just really could use a word. I could really use a word. And this morning, before I got up, Lord, I'd just really like to hear You. And He just poured out some stuff to me today. It was just very exciting. Just very exciting. And I was just going, wow! Got goosebumps just thinking about it. Wow! God speaks. But again, not my will. I'm not sitting there going, God, give me that. God, give me this. God, do that. You know these people running around telling God what to do? Really? As if they're the Father and He's their slave? It doesn't work that way. In worship, I surrender and I just seek God's will for my every choice. Emotional, physical, and so on through my life. Because worship is surrender. That's all it is. Worship is surrender. And so, will I surrender my life? Now, as you're working through these spiritual disciplines, I told you that they work in a series. The next one depends on the previous ones. One of the reasons that we have so much trouble in the church of the 21st century getting people to volunteer and to work is because they don't have the first four, so surely the discipline of service is not part and parcel of their lives. You see, if it's more about me than He, why would I want to serve? And so turn with me to Mark chapter 10. In Mark chapter 10, we're going to center ourselves into four verses, verse 42 through 45. It's the discipline of service. And in this passage, Jesus has been having a little discussion. And James and John, the sons of thunder, have decided that, at the prompting of their mother, that they want to have the right hand and left hand most senior positions in heaven for all eternity. They deserve them for some reason. I don't know why. And so Jesus is dealing with that issue when He comes to make this statement, which is like taking the sword of the Spirit and hacking away at the issue of selfishness. And when Jesus hacks away the self in selfishness, what's left is surrendered service. And so we read there where He says in verse 42, Jesus called them all to Himself, and He said to them all, "You all know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them." Get the picture? I'm the boss, you're not. That's what He's saying. That's what the Gentiles do. "Yet it shall not be so amongst you all. But whoever desires to become great..." You want the right hand or the left hand? If you want to be great, then you shall be a servant. "And whoever of you desires to be first..." And those are the first two places right underneath me, so I'm talking to you, James and John. "Shall be slave of all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Service is a selfless act. When I go into the bathrooms at Starbucks, I clean them. In fact, when I go into the bathroom anywhere, I clean it. Don't expect anybody to get excited about it. Don't expect anybody to pay me for it. Don't expect anybody to notice it. It's just what I do. It's service. You see, service says, how can I inconvenience myself for your benefit? And that's very unnatural, un-American. It is very much foreign to what most people consider to be the faith. Service in this respect, notice what Jesus says. If you desire to become great, you have to serve. Notice, you shall be the servant. Now, the question always rolls around in somebody's head, when is God going to do this in me? When is God going to do this so that I'm like that? And it's the wrong question. This is our responsibility. This is our responsibility. The question should be, when are you going to start serving? The easiest place to serve, and this is why a man can't be a deacon or a woman can't be a deacon in a church, if they can't serve their family, 1 Timothy chapter 3. You can't serve your family, you surely can't serve in the house of God. And so, service is all about inconvenience. I mean, it's not really service if I'm going that way anyway. It's not really, oh yeah, okay, I'll take you. You're right next door to my house. And hey, well, you're just, it's on the way. I'll just drop you off. That's not service. I guess in one sense it is. But it's not really the service that Jesus is talking about. He's talking about servants and slaves. He's talking about major inconvenience. And so in the discipline of service, you and I are constantly working to ask ourselves a very simple question. How can I inconvenience myself for your benefit? And am I willing to set aside my pleasure for yours? In ministry, you're going to find that a lot of people get sick and they go to the hospital and some never come back. Selfish, immature people say, I don't want to go to the hospital and see them that way. I want to remember them healthy. Now that is the evidence of an immature soul. That is the evidence of a selfish soul. If you've had to take care of somebody to their death, you know how horrible that statement of, I don't want to see them that way, I don't want to remember them that way. You know how horrible that selfishness is. I come to the place where I set aside my pleasure. If you've cleaned up an adult, you know what I'm talking about. Service is about being like Jesus. The last night, what did he do? He picked up a bowl. He took the towel and washed their feet. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal anymore. But if you're walking on roads that are made of dirt, where cows and sheep and camels poop and pee, and that's what you walk in all day long, it's a lot different. And if you happen to be the Son of God and know everything there is to know about biological germs, it's worse. Ignorance is bliss in this case. You see, in service, I am transporting the character of Jesus into my location right now. I'm transporting the character of Jesus. Do you remember what he said there in verse 45? Look at it again. In verse 45, he's very clear. He said, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. He's talking about the cross. He came to die. Jesus came to die. See, if you come to die, and you know you're going to die, it's very easy to do anything a slave does because you've already given up your rights. You've already set across those rights and put them, not my will, but yours be done. And so from the place of worship, seeing God's will for my every choice, service becomes this living to please and help people when they are in need. And so, could you come over? I've got an overflowing toilet. Could you come over? I can't get my freezer to turn on. Could you come over and help me? Could you take me? Could you? Especially when your life is busy. If the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. And busy is one of the greatest tools Lucifer uses to keep us from serving others. Love your neighbor as yourself. Did you feed yourself today? Did you wash your clothes this week? Did you provide yourself a place to sleep? What about your neighbors? Do you love your neighbors as you love yourself? Service is a huge way where we literally transport the character of Jesus into the lives of those around us, our neighbors, and show them.
Would you like to help spread the word by sharing this message? Perhaps you would consider sharing this message with a friend. God longs to release the captives of our culture into the freedom of faith. Thank you for your consideration. Have you heard about Dr. Smith's newest book? If you want to make an impact in your community, county, country, or even continent, Dr. Smith has written a new book to help you accomplish your dreams. Gathering Missional Leaders is a guided study that explores the elements necessary to build the habitat that will attract a strong and vibrant coalition of men and women who want to reach their world in their generation. Gathering Missional Leaders was born as a field manual, a how-to guide, to help local churches become training centers where people can learn to go and make disciples of all nations, and build a climate in their church where the next generation of mission-minded Christians can come together and thrive. You can order a copy of Gathering Missional Leaders at the Eagles in Leadership website simply by clicking the appropriate link on the right-hand side panel of the Eagles in Leadership website. Today's episode was recorded live in Bell Gardens, California, and edited by Ryan Longsworth in Los Angeles, California. And now until next time, we are praying that you would be filled with the love of God so that you can demonstrate His love to the lost and dying in your city. God bless.